sahanau bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavahitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Gone from the Stula Sharira to the Sukshma Sharira to the Karana Sharira, and gone into some detail about those three as being Vyatiriktaha Atma, something the Atma is distinct from these three Shariras. Stula, Sukshma, Karana Sharira, Vyatiriktaha Atma. Vyatiriktaha means other than, separate from. Then having done this, the Karana, Sukshma, the stula sukshma karana shariras, taking these three shariras, he then went into these avastas. And so it was said trikala avastaha kaha, I think. What are these three avastas? Right, so these are your vocabulary list. So what are these three avastas? So we went into that as the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. The waking state belongs to the physical body. To experience the waking state, you have to be able to be experiencing through your sense organs this physical body. So the focus here is on the stula sharira, the physical body. The dream state, the experience of the waking state, and including the physical body, is not there. So the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, is withdrawn from the sense organs, you know, and therefore from the experience of the physical experience of this physical world and the physical body. And yet it is active. The mind is active. That's what we call the dream state. Then we have the Karana Sharira, causal body. And the causal body is related to the Shushupti Avastha, the deep sleep state. And so in the deep sleep state, we don't experience any duality at all. That lack of knower known duality, especially, is called nirvikalpa. Vikalpa means there's no duality experience. There's no especially subject-object duality. Because if you remove the subject-object duality, you remove all duality. Or if the subject and object is not there, then there is no experience of duality. So both the deep sleep state, the Shushupti Avastha, and the self, the Atma, is free of these vikalpas, subject-object duality. But with the deep sleep state, there's this complete ajnanam. If you remove any type of vikalpa, and then, so there's no subject-object relationship, that doesn't mean you are in samadhi. It means that the body-mind sense organs, the sukshma sharira and the stula sharira, are in an unmanifest condition, so that the subject-object relationship is not recognized at that time. There are two nirvikalpa states. One is the deep sleep state, and one is the atma. And so in the Mundaka Upanishad, they talk about this. This whole creation resolves into its causal condition, which is called avyakta. Avyakta means it's completely unmanifest. That is what we as jivas experience as the deep sleep state. It's nirvikalpa, it's unmanifest, there's no subject-object relationship when you're in that particular state. But more subtle than that state is a second avyakta. So the word vyakta means that which is manifest for experience. That which has namarupa is vyakta. Avyakta means no. There's no namarupa, there's no subject-object experience. So the first avyakta is that absolute ajnanam from the standpoint of the jiva. It's the karana sharira. It's the shushupti avastha. Karana sharira, causal body, shushupti avastha, deep sleep state. Both of these are unmanifest condition, nirvikalpa, there's no subject-object duality. That unmanifest condition also is what we call maya. That absolute ignorance, what is absolute ignorance on the, or at, you know, total ignorance, instead of absolute, I'll say total ignorance on the part of the jiva, is what we call avidya or ajnanam. But that same avidya or ajnanam is called maya from the standpoint of the total creation. Because it's from this avidya or from this maya that the creation becomes manifest. The same creation that went into unmanifest condition comes out in manifest condition. So for instance, in the deep sleep state, when you go to sleep, the same person comes back out. So it's not, you don't go into a state of destruction, you go into what we call an unmanifest or a causal condition because you come back out. Same memory, same identification with the same sharira, with the same body, you know, same sense organs, same sense of self in reference to this body, mind, sense organs. And so that's why this causal condition is considered to be the maya upadi, the maya for Ishwara, because there's no ajnanam, there's just maya that comes into a manifest condition and then cyclically comes into manifestation and goes into unmanifest from beginningless time. But we're talking about the manifestation and withdrawal of the entire creation. So there's no ajnanam there. But for the jiva, you know, it's the same maya, but from a limited level, from the level of the jiva going into its causal condition, coming back out, causal condition, coming back out. Yeah. But that causal condition for the jiva is avidya. What is just the maya upadi coming into unmanifest condition for Ishwara, there's no ignorance, is for you, for the jiva, coming into that unmanifest condition is coming into what is the cause of the sense of separation of jivatvam in the first place is ajnanam. Right? If there is no ajnanam there, then if you were floating around as a jiva, there would be nothing but it would be nothing but Ishwara. Like all of the waves, say all the waves are jnani waves. They're just the ocean. There's no separation between the waves and the ocean. They're just the ocean. So say for us, if there is no avidya there, what are we? Well, we're just the part of Ishwara. That's all. We're part of Ishwara. We are a wave in the ocean. We are doing whatever Ishwara is doing. Our prarabdha karma, the prarabdha karma that we experience, is Ishwara. You know? And say there's no jiva interfering with the jiva srishti, then there's no problem. The jiva srishti is the part that has this ajnanam and that gets worried and concerned, you know, and is worried that my happiness is at stake because I'm projecting my ananda onto the world. I'm projecting my existence, my very existence onto the world, onto my body, my sense organs. You know, I experience my knowledge as limited because my sense organs and my mind are limited. And so I take on all of the limitations of the upadi. Who takes them on? Ishwara is not taking them on. So they're taken on, they're actually not even taken on, they're beginningless limitations taken on because of the avidya upadi. That's our karana sharira. So these three upadis, upadi means we can sometimes translate as a conditioning adjunct. There's two ways of, probably more, but two major ways of talking about or defining what we mean by an upadi. Or a conditioning adjunct. One, from the standpoint of the jiva, it's whatever the ahankara, the I notion, can land on. To say, this is me or this is mine. These are my sense organs. This is my body. Or I can say, I am my body, or this is my mind. These are my thoughts. These are my feelings. You know, This is my illness. I am sick. These are I and mine are ahankara. And so the ahankara, the I notion, you can, if you can superimpose yourself on it and say, I am that or this is mine, that's an upadhi. Because that upadhi is providing a situation where that mistake is possible to be made. So this word upadhi. Another way we use the word upadhi is a famous example that's used in the different Prakarana Granthas, the teaching text that we use, is imagine a crystal. Swamiji uses this example frequently. Just imagine, you know, a crystal sitting on a table. Just an absolutely beautiful, clear crystal, like a crystal ball sitting on the table. And you bring a red flower up behind it. And now all of a sudden the crystal has become red. The crystal has taken on the redness of the rose. And so when you look at the crystal, you experience a red crystal. And then a blue flower can be brought, you know, or a yellow flower. And the color of the crystal changes completely. But the crystal remains totally untouched at the same time as it appears totally red, totally blue, totally yellow, depending upon what the upadhi with the conditioning adjunct is that allows the crystal to be perceived as that. Right? That's the upadhi. The upadhi is such that it allows the crystal to take on that color without itself changing at all. So here, this body-mind-sense organs, which is not the self, it's the self from its own standpoint, but from myself, my standpoint, nothing is happening. My body takes itself, my body-mind-sense organs, it takes itself to me, be me. But from my standpoint, like from the crystal standpoint, nothing has happened at all. I do not assume in any way the nature of the body-mind-sense organs. I don't assume or take on in any way the thoughts, moods, emotions, affects of my mind. No point of identity with anything that can be objectifiable. What do I mean by objectifiable? It means if something is objectifiable, it lends itself to a subject-object relationship. I know this. So anytime I use the word objectifiable, that means it's subject to it being known, that there's a subject-object knower-known relationship. That's what makes it objectifiable. So in fact, anything that is objectifiable, right, that I can identify as myself is an upadhi. A conditioning adjunct. And so the upadhis are a problem. They are the problem. If there were no upadhis, there'd be no problem. For there to be an upadhi, in other words, just think about it, for me to take myself to be something that I'm experiencing through my sense organs or through my mind, you know, is a mistake. It's just simply a mistake. I take myself to be something that I'm actually aware of, and it's even more profound than that. Not only are the things that I take myself to be objects of my awareness, and so therefore objectifiable, they are also changing. Now, how can I possibly be something that I'm looking at, number one, and number two, something that is changing while I'm not? You know? Like, say, for instance, one of the most extreme accountings of this is the relationship you have with your own mind. Obviously, it is objectifiable, whatever the emotion or the perception or the thought or even the ahankara, the I notion. These thoughts are all known to me. And if I ask you, do you know your thoughts? Yes. Yeah. Are you aware of your emotions? Very, you know. So that means that there's a knower known relationship between you and your emotions. Well, I guess so, yeah. There's a knower known relationship between you and your thoughts. Yeah, I know them. You just have to point it out. Nobody's going to say, no, I don't know my thoughts. No, I have no idea what my emotions are. I don't know. That just isn't true. Everybody knows they know their emotions. Everybody knows they know their thoughts. So there's your subject-object relationship. But not only that, say we just sit with our mind and watch your thoughts. This thought, or watch your emotions, or whatever is taking place in the mind. The emotions or the thoughts or the perceptions, they come into your scope, they are known, and they leave. You know, it's thought, 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 thought. They come and they go, and they don't stay very long. You know? Now, if they come and they go, and you remain, there is no possibility of you being that, because they're gone and you're still here. It's like if everybody gets up and walks out of the room right now, except for me, that just proves to me that I am not you. All right? On this level of Maya, on this level of duality, if I have a subject-object relationship with something, first of all, I can't be that thing I'm looking at. Try to think of any example where you are what you look at, what you have a subject-object relationship. There is no such example. And anything that comes and goes, and while you remain, that also is not possible. So we know this, and we don't know it. We know it. It makes complete sense when it's anything external to the physical body. We can say, yeah, of course. But we haven't done the viveka, which now these, all that we're working with now, are these different relationships we have with the body, mind, sense organs, with our different states of experience, and then we'll see with the panchakoshas, the kind of five sheaths we call them. We have to do this analysis so that I can bring into consciousness, into my knowledge banks, that this not only is not possible to have this subject-object relationship on any level of my experience and for me to be the thing that I'm actually looking at and watching. And also, it's not at all possible for me to be something which has come and gone while I remain. That is not possible. We know that very well from the body, external to the body, but we're not used to doing that type of analysis in reference to my own self and my body, mind, sense organs, and all of the experiences I have from the body inward, right, on more subtle levels. And so that's why we're going painstakingly through all of these different koshas, the panchakosha, the three shariras, the three states of experience. It's all to help me logically and experientially to recognize this differentiation, and to have this, what we call viveka, because of the whole begin at the near the beginning, it's tattva vivekaha kaha. What are you talking about with this tattva? If you're a qualified student, then you are an adhikari for this tattva viveka, this discriminative analysis of the truth. Yeah. So what do you have to discriminate? Well, it's not from here out. That we're doing fine with that level of discrimination from the skin out. It is the discrimination from my body, my sense organs, my mind, my buddhi, the ahankara, all of my experiences in reference to the subject, me. Is there any viveka that needs to be done there? Or am I just the body? Or am I just this body, mind, sense organs? If I am, then just eat well, do yoga, follow dharmas, do yoga so that you have a healthy body, you know. Follow dharma so that you have shanti in your mind and be happy as you can be. That's it. Go in peace. That is the lecture. It's over. I guess then we would analyze how to make the best out of your body that you possibly can. How to really understand Dharma and follow Dharma to the best of your ability. Because in the end, these are the things that are the most stable things that you can influence in terms of having an ongoing shanti. The pleasure stuff, let me have this so I can be happy, that is just a roller coaster ride for the samsari, even for the samsari. That is hell for the samsari. I need this so I can be happy. I have to have it like this so I can be happy. It doesn't work. It gives you that 15-second samadhi. It's a nightmare. Even the most samsaris, they want to get out of that. And they follow the shastra in order to get out of it and just have relative happiness. It kind of goes like this. Honor your body, mind, sense organs as though it is Bhagavan's temple. Take care of it, you know. Get enough sleep. Eat the right food. Don't be too fat. Exercise. And in India they have yoga and some other exercises because yoga will balance the whole body. And yoga includes pranayama and all of the Ashtanga yoga. So they give that. It's ancient. It's ancient in the Shastra. And you know what else they give? Dharma. These two, the Dharma, overrides just about everything. Because any pleasure, any sukha-dukkha of any kind that does not take place within Dharma gives agony. Because you're doing it so you can be happy, but it's within a Dharma, and so you have agony. It's supposed to make you happy, it's what you want, and you have agony. And you learn this through experience. It doesn't really have to be taught. Bhagavan teaches it to you. Dharma does not have to be taught. You know how you want to be treated. Nobody has to teach you Dharma in reference to what you want. You want to be loved by people. You want to be respected. You want to be cared for. You want to be taken into consideration. You want to be held when you're sick and waited on and all this. Of course. Just make a list and everybody will go, yeah, that's right. We all know. We all know what it is. And we all know what it is to break it. That's why you can try to be creative and try to buck the system, you know. Well, I think I can get around that. And this is more important and I can override Dharma. And let me try. Let me try to do it my own way. And you can try and try and try, and Dharma will just slap you right back. It won't pat you back. It'll sock you back. Just go too far, push the edges too far. It takes care of things. That's why Bhagavan himself is called Janardana, the one who punishes the Adharmis. It's not that Bhagavan's thinking, there's an Adharmi. Let's get him. No. It's the laws. You're bucking up against the laws. The laws take care of you. You know? So, even in the world of samsara, these basics we learn. You don't have to be a mumukshu. But, to be a mumukshu and then to gain this knowledge, if you haven't learned these things, you still have to learn them. You can be a mumukshu, and you can be doing shravana, manana, nidha, dhyasana, all of these things, but the Dharma has not won out over your will, or your will hasn't, done its pranams to Dharma, you know, then there is still a pretty bumpy ride. But you're a mumukshu. That doesn't mean you're not a mumukshu. You're a mumukshu. And so all of us have to come to terms with all of this. On every level, even the most subtle levels, we have to come to terms with it. Because to the degree we don't come to terms with it, to that degree we suffer. You know? You can't hurt another person and be happy. Bhagavan doesn't allow that. Oh, look, I've just knocked out that other person. I really deserved it. It doesn't work. Even on a subtle level, it doesn't work. You know, so we have to come to terms with all of these things. And that gives us kind of the stonum, you know, for being able to gain this knowledge. That's why in the first part of the Tetrabodha, they went through, you know, the sadhana chaturshtaya. Because we have to, and if, say if you go into Viveka Chudamani or these Prakarana Granthas means these explanatory texts, or even in the Upanishads, they go through this painstakingly so that, not because, I'm just thinking of something that's really funny Swamiji said, in chapters 16, 17, and 18 of the Bhagavad Gita, but especially chapter 16 and 17, they spend like, they must be like 30 verses defining and giving examples of the rakshasas, the asuras, the adharmis. In the one example after another, they do this and they do this and they act like this and they act like that. In great detail, you think, okay, that's what they are. Oh no, we have to have another verse about how they act, okay? Mm-hmm. No, we have to have another. So this goes on and on and on in great detail. Defining a dharma. And I think Krishna says in one of the, and Swamiji went on and just had a good time with it. Shankara says, we're not teaching all of these asuric qualities so that you can become like that. We're teaching all of these things so that you can recognize them when they come up in yourself. So that it's just defining it in depth. When these things come up, you say, ah, you know. And you have something, you have some teaching around that, you know. Otherwise you have to learn all that by yourself. You have to learn through trial and error, like putting your feet, your hand in fire. Oh, that doesn't work. But then we might say, are you sure it doesn't work? Let me try it again. No, it doesn't, right? So all of these things we have to learn and we have to, based upon our knowledge and as we gain that understanding, our value system becomes very strong. It becomes strong like Swamiji's Value of Values. Most of you, I hope, have read that. It's a wonderful book, this Value of Values. He gives a value for each one of the values so you really understand how important it is for your own shanti, you know. And that shanti gives you the inner space to be able to gain this knowledge. To gain this knowledge requires viveka. The mind has to be able to discriminate, you know, between myself and the objectifiable experiences that I have. Okay, so when we look at this avastakraya, how does it say it here? I want to just do this particular prakriya so we can just see how it is. Because there's some beautiful logics that they use in this. Yeah, avastatrayam kim. So I said traya avasta. That wasn't right. It should be avastatrayam. The avastatraya, the threefold avastas, states of experience, waking, dream, deep sleep. It's on top of 23. What are these three avastas? And then it went through jagrat avasta, swapna avasta, and shushupti avasta. Listing them. These three now, the analysis of these three avastas is a prakriya, a teaching methodology where the pramana itself is wielded. And this means that knowledge is being wielded using the relationship of these three avastas, these three states of experience, to me, to who is called the Sakshi in reference to each one of these states of experience. I become the witness from the standpoint, the seer, the witness from the standpoint of each experience. So that the prakriya is called the Avastatraya Sakshi. That's the name of the prakriya. The Sakshi is the witness of these three states of experience. And so that is going to be a viveka, a discrimination between myself and these avastas which I experience. Okay. This particular prakriya is based on a logic that we call anvaya vyatireka. Anvaya vyatireka. So that this is there. We use this logic all of the time. I'll give many other examples of it, but this particular prakriya, the Avastha Traya Sakshi, is a wonderful example of this particular logic. It's just plain and simple logic, and it's always brought in when we start with this particular prakriya. So here's how it goes. The anvaya stands for a positive relationship. A positive relationship between two things is the anvaya. The vyatireka is a negative relationship between two things. So if we have a logic called anvaya vyatireka, then that means that there is basically a very tight relationship between two things. So let me tell you, here's just an example, without using an object. Say that basic code of the sentence for anvaya, showing that positive relationship. When this is, that is. If this is there, then that is there, right? So now at this point you can say, well, when this is, that is, maybe there's a relationship between the two, right? Because whenever this thing is there, that is, right? But then, so like, say if I use an example, when the sun is, like when the sun is up, the day is. So yeah, there must be a relationship between the two, but I don't know for sure. Maybe there isn't, you know? So then you have to test it with the vyatireka. When this is not, that is not. So say we have when the sun is, the day is, and now we do the vyatireka, the negative, when the sun is not, the day is not, and that's also true, then there's a relationship there between the two. They depend upon each other. You can't have the day without the sun, basically. Okay. So we're going to apply this anvaya vyatireka to this waking dream deep sleep in reference to myself. So we can start with this. Just look at these for a while. We'll do this in a little different ways. Like say when you say, when the waking state is, I am. Okay. When the waking state is, I am. When the waking state is not. Now, when is it that the waking state is not? What do they mean by that? That means when the dream state is, because the waking state is completely replaced by the dream state. This is something I want you to be really clear on now. Here I have the waking state. I'm experiencing it through my sense organs. I'm me. You're you. We know each other. We'll go when we wake up in the morning. Here we still are. We know each other. We're still in the same place. You know, we still are living here together. We're having this course. So here, waking state, we know clearly. But now, when you go to sleep at night and you have a dream, when that dream is, that's your experience, in terms of your experience, the waking state is not there. You have no waking. The waking state can be there, but from your experience, in terms of what you actually experience, when the waking state is not there, the dream state, say the dream state is there, then the waking state is not there. The dream state replaces the waking state. The two don't exist at the same time. That's true even in daydream. Say now I'm using my sense organs, I'm experiencing you, and then at some time, usually it's when you're the teacher, this doesn't happen. It happens all the time when you're the student in my experience. You're listening, you're here, you're in the waking state, and all of a sudden, you're out in your imagination. The waking state, the imaginal state. The imaginal state experientially is replacing the waking state. So here we use the big kahuna, the big, most powerful example. Waking state is, I am. Waking state is not, dream state is, I am not. Is that right? Waking state is, I am. dream state is I'm not. Is that true? No, it's not true. It's my dream. I'm there in the dream. It is my dream. So we say, waking state is I am. Dream state is I still am. Correct? But look at what's negated. In the waking state, not only do I have this world that I'm aware of, you know, through my sense organs, I also have my physical body, and I have all of my relationships. There's a lot going on here for me in this waking state, a lot of points of identity, even including my relationships, my job, what I do for a living, you know, my whole situation, everything, not just this body, the whole world, including this body. So when I say, when the waking state is, I am, when the dream state is, I still am. Now, who is that? Who is that that still is? Because now, also in the dream state, we have another body. It's somebody else. It doesn't necessarily have to even look like you. It can be somebody else. It can be you as a child. It can be an animal. It can be somebody who is not you. It can be, and it can be you. And it can be you, even at your age, in a modified form. There's all kinds of weird things that can happen in the dream. And you are identified with that character. That's who you are, and that is your field of experience. But if I ask you, when the waking state is replaced by the dream state, are you still there or not? Yes, I'm still there. But then I would say, yeah, but the waking world is very different than the dream world. Yes, it is. The waking individual that you're identified is very different than the dream individual that you're identified with. Yeah, it is. Even the waking relationships can be very different than the dream relationships. I know. Okay. But you, who are the waker, you are the dreamer. Right? Yes. Who is that? Whoever that is cannot be defined by the waking state or the dream state, and it cannot be defined by the one that you are identified with in the waking state, the character in the waking state, this person here, or the character in the dream state, right? And so now all of a sudden, you're fine. You haven't lost anything. You, the self of the waker and waking state, is the me. This me of the waker waking state is me, the self of the dreamer dream state. But everything that you thought yourself to be is not there. Now, there's something tricky and extraordinary to understand here. Now, you can say, yeah, but even though I'm dreaming, the waking state is still here. I just am not experiencing it. We know that it's still here. I said, that's correct. It's still here. You're not experiencing it. You know, and the dream state that I'm experiencing, it only lasts for a short amount of time. That's also true. It's not true internally to the dream. Internally, the dream can last for really a long time, where externally, it's lasting only for 2 or 3 minutes from the standpoint of this physical universe. I said, yeah, that's true. But now the question is, can you be something, can you be an experience which is not here? Can you be someone who has an experience sometimes and other times doesn't have an experience? Do you think that that experience that comes and goes or shifts or changes is you? How can it be? How can you remain if the experience, whatever it is, goes away? Honestly. Even in reference now, we'll go to deep sleep in a minute, maybe. Even in reference to your thoughts and your experiences in the world, this is true. This is why we've done some Viktrisha Viveka earlier on. Now we go to this, the actual states of experience where the whole state is being taken away from your own nature. But now say, you go back to the waking state, and here I am, this waking person with this waking body, and we apply the same logic, anvaya vyatireka. And think of it in experience. Just let's look at it in terms of the mind. When this thought is, I am. Okay, right. That's true. This thought is, I am. But when this next thought is, which totally replaces, right, the first thought, when that thought is, am I or am I not? I am. Right? What does that mean? It means I have no relationship whatsoever with the thought. Because, say, this thought is, I am. Now this thought, which replaces that thought, so this thought no longer is, I still am. What does that mean? It means these experiences can't touch me in any way. If they touched me in any way, okay, here comes this thought, ah, I have been born. Because now this thought is, I am. I have been born, and now this thought is replaced. It's gone, and now I'm dead. Or I've gone on a long travel away from whoever this is. It's not our experience. Our experience as we know, and this is just almost a joke to explain it, but it needs to be, we need to explain it, you know, clearly so that we can recognize that this experience that we always have actually means something in terms of myself. What about when your emotions come? I'm so sad. And the thing about the emotions is they go on and on. Okay, especially the negative ones. Okay. I'm sad. And then there's a shift. And that emotion goes. And now maybe I'm neutral. I'm neutral, 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 neutral. I'm biting there. And that goes. I'm happy. That goes, I'm agitated. Right? So these emotions have their own kind of time. And all the thoughts take place within the emotions, actually. So that's why they seem so real. But the fact is that you're the happy, sad, agitated, you know, agitated, whatever one it happens to be, neutral. All of those things pass through you. You are every one of those things. But for you to be every one of those things, you have to be free of every one of those things. Otherwise, say you're really happy and the sadness comes, and what happens is the... So now the happy person, this happy vritti, you know, now is moving into the sad vritti, and now we have the happy, sad person. Because now they're squashed together too. but now something's irritating you, so now we have the happy, sad, irritated person. Now something else happens and you're feeling really depressed, but now you have the happy, sad, irritated, depressed person. That is not, it's not building up like that. Right? It's one at a time. One at a time. And you are the one who owns every one of them. I am this. I am this. I am this. I am this. That's what we call the ahankara. That's the ahankara. That means there's no viveka present between myself and the emotion. So what would have to be, you know, you have to be able to apply this anvaya vyatireka, to believe in these experiences, and that will go like this. When this thought is, I am. Okay? Possible relationship. But when this thought is gone, I still am. No relationship. Because otherwise you would have to go when that thought goes. But if it comes, even to say like this, okay, when this thought comes, it comes into the to me. Was I there before the thought came or not? Yes, I was. What if you say no? Can you say that you were not there before the thought came? No, you can't really say that. So you were there before, during, and after the thought. So now you can't say, I am the thought. It's not possible. Because you outlast the thought. So the anvaya vyatireka breaks down because you would have to say, when this thought is, I am, okay, possible relationship, but when it goes, I still am, no relationship. That means anvaya vyatireka is not there. It seemed to be a relationship, but that is false because it can go and you remain. See what I mean? So you can do it with your emotions. When this emotion comes, I am there. So possible relationship. Relationship means I am that. Now that this relation, now that this sadness has come, I am a sad person. Is that true? Are you a sad person now? Because the sadness has come. You say I'm a sad person, but if you apply this logic, when the sadness goes, do you go with it? No, I don't. So that means there's no relationship. The Vyatireka portion breaks down. If it breaks down, you can't own that as being yours. It is an experience that you have, but it's also an experience that you are aware of. That ruins it right there in terms of identity. You have an experience that you're aware of, and you have an experience that comes and goes. You're aware of it, and it comes and goes. So this is something that you experience, and there's also a logic which defies your ability to get around it. How can you get around that logic? And that it's both the experience and the logic. How can you get around these two, you know? So it's these little, like this is the, so we're doing this Anvayavyatireka logic that we often, almost invariably, use, you know, in this Avastatraya Sakshi, the three states of experience. But I'm just saying that this logic applies everywhere. That yourself can never be identified with something objectifiable. It's not possible. And we've done it in terms of your awareness of your body through your sin. This is the Drisha Viveka Prakriya. We've done it in terms of your awareness of the body. There's a subject-object relationship. And we say, well, that's because my eyes are aware of the body. So the eyes are the subject, my body is the object. The body is objectified by the eyes. And so therefore, you know, they can't be the eyes. The eyes become the subject, this becomes the object. But then the eyes are objectified by the mind. Right? So the mind becomes the subject, the eyes become the object, they're objectified. You know? And then is the mind objectified or not? Yes, the mind is objectified. It is known. The thoughts are known, the emotions are known. So now we have a subject-object relationship there, right? So the mind becomes objectified, the sakshi, the self becomes, you say the self becomes the subject. And then is there anything, we can do things in between, like space is known, time is known, your ignorance is known and your knowledge is known. The ahankara itself is known. So all of these things are objectifiable. Then finally you just get to me, to myself, the one who is left, differentiated in the subject-object relationship, and then you say, yes, I'm still here now. Who am I now? Now that I've got rid of the body as an object and not me, and I've got rid of my sense organs, and I've got rid of my mind and my buddhi and the ahankara and time and space itself, who am I? Because here I am. Who am I without all of those upadis? All of those conditioning adjuncts, because they're obviously not myself, because of that subject-object relationship. So the Drisha Viveka, the seer-seen differentiation, Prakriya, it takes me to the self which cannot be objectified. You objectify everything you possibly can, and then you're just left with yourself. And then they'll bring in, I could go further with that, but right now we're just left with a self that is free of all of the bodies, free of all of the sense organs, free of all of the minds, because all of our minds are doing the same thing, free of all time, free of all space, just me that is now, nothing cannot be objectified, there's no me behind me, right? So that objectification is over. What makes me different from you? And so this is where that prakriya goes, what makes me different from you? If I've negated, if we've all negated all of our differences, our bodies are different, our sense organs are different, our minds are different, we've negated all those differences. We've negated space, objectifiable. We've negated time, objectifiable. What makes me, the one who's left, different from you? You can't say space. Can't say the body, mind, sense organs, objectifiable. Can't say time, objectifiable. Can't say the ahankara, objectifiable. What is there that makes me different from you? And then when you move, and then you don't know what to say. Am I supposed to say nothing? Yeah. Nothing. Nothing makes me different from you. It's only within Maya that those differences take place. So we'll spend a lot of time on this, but right now I'm wanting you to understand the power of these prakriyas. Because I can go from here, which this one also, the Anvayavyatireka applies, that say if I go now into the waking dream deep sleep, what do you realize? That yeah, the whole universe, by that I mean the entire waking state, that includes the body, mind, sense organs, as this is part, right, of this waking state. This is I am. But when it's replaced by the dream state, that whole waking state is replaced by the dream. And I'm still here. If the whole waking state is an object of my experience, you know, and that object of my experience, the waking state, is replaced by the dream state, you know, which also includes that any point of identification I may have, body, mind, sense organs, then I'm not the waking state. I am not limited by the waking state, and I'm not limited by the dream state. Because even the dream state is displaced by the deep sleep state. And in the deep sleep state, you know what goes? Everything, including the knower known, the vikalpa of knower known, even that is taken away. Because I can be without that experience. If I can be without the experience, I am not that. So myself, my being, see, when you do the drisha, you realize that the sense organs, you know, the body, the sense organs and the mind, which are our faculties of knowledge, we have a subject-object relationship with those. So they are not me. Like, those aren't me because I'm aware of them. And so they're objectifiable. So that alone means that they don't belong to me. They're not my nature. And then I show in the waking state and between the waking state and the dream state, the whole upadi and the waking state and the whole upadi and the dream state, upadi means the one you're identified, both are gone. They negate each other. And then just to finalize the whole thing, you have the deep sleep state, where there is no subject-object relationship at all. There is nirvikalpa. It is not there. There's not anyone there even to say, oh, I'm in deep sleep, isn't that nice? There's no commentator. Until you wake up, and then the commentator remembers that as chitta, as a memory. Oh, I slept so well. That was amazing. I had such a deep sleep. It was wonderful. You know, we went through that. I slept so happily. I slept slow, so well. Ah, gosh, wish I could always sleep like that. You are remembering that state. But in that state, and you're fine with that state. That's another thing. You love that state. You have no problem that you're not there. What does that mean, you're not there? The body which you never were is not there. The sense organs which you never were is not there. The mind that you never were is not there. The universe that you never were is not there. You are fine. And you love it. These things that cause so much angst, so many problems, so many worries, Bhagavan just gives us this wonderful time out. Or just get rid of all of that for, you know, if what you should be doing, children, 8 hours a day. You should get rid of all of these experiences for 8 hours a day. You know, you just let the mind and body relax in that absolute blackout where nothing is there. Only you. Okay. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to go to bed. And you wake up in the morning, the alarm goes off. Oh, And you go back into that beautiful kind of limbo, wonderful sinking back. That's a samadhi, Ajnana samadhi. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are our experiences put together with some logic. That's what a prakriya is. It takes you step by step by step to a viveka, a discriminative analysis of your experiences. And it makes you see those and analyze those experiences, not somebody else's experience, they are our experiences. And then to see what is actually going on there, to actually do that viveka and just be left with yourself, you know, and with an understanding of why that is so. So the Tattva Bodha is just making clear, when we go to the chapter 1 of Panchadashi, they'll do these same prakriyas and others in different ways. But we have to understand what's happening and how powerful this teaching is, because it is dealing with what is right here in the room, with the experiences, you know, that we are actually having. It's an amazing thing.
Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.